Hello, welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I'm Darius Nomdaron, your host, and today I've got a very practical podcast for you with a very practical person. I want to introduce you to someone who has a background in disability and education. She's neurodiverse herself, and she is every day she tutors people one-to-one online, has been doing it for nearly a decade, and she helps people in the workplace and university adapt to the environment with their different ways of thinking. And so she's a real expert in getting access to work. Now, in the UK, this is very useful for people in the UK, and in America, you can just dream about this and maybe find something that's maybe a bit like this. And Australia, I don't think you probably have something like this. But in the UK, we have this very little known, but very powerful thing called access to work, where the government will actually pay your employer to help you adapt anything to the way the needs you have as an employee if you've got some sort of disability. And in the UK, we class dyslexia as a disability, although it won't feel like a disability to you maybe, but from the social perspective of disability, the system is disabling you. And so the system can be adjusted so that you can actually express your unique abilities and be really productive. And so today I've got with us again, Kerry Pace. Kerry, it's great to have you back.
Hello, hello, 2021. I shall ask if I hope you have a safe and healthy rather than a happy new year, because saying happy new year doesn't feel quite right at the moment. But yes, access to work, big passion of mine. I am in receipt of it myself. I help others get receipt of it. And my daughter, who's 24, who's just joined our diverse learners team as an admin assistant, has also just got access to work. So as you say, it is from the government, for the Department of Work and Pensions is the department that deal with that. And little known fact, about 1% of people who are eligible for access to work get access to work.
Because it's not that they get rejected, it's because only 1% are really asking for it.
Well, it's just not publicised. I'll keep politics out of it, but you know, it's not publicised, and yes, there are lots of reasons for that. Also, a lot of people, it links into reasonable adjustments, and you know, knowing that you can have a reasonable adjustment, or you might have an employer that puts those reasonable adjustments in place anyway. And also, it relies on that word disclosure. So disclosing, yes, your disability. I don't like that word. I reframe that word into declaring.
Declaring, okay.
I feel like a much more positive word, a bit like when you have a dyslexia assessment, people say you're diagnosed with dyslexia or dyspraxia. I much prefer identified as, yes, having dyslexia, yes, or dyspraxia. So for us at Diverse Learners, we do things quite differently. One of the reasons, examples of that is, as you say, I've been doing Zoom and Skype and MS Teams that everybody seems to be doing for the last coming up to a year now, but I've been doing it for 10 years. So that's the only way I provide support. And that was created because Diverse Learners wanted to make sure that everybody could access support. So we're open from 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night and at weekends as well. So we can fit in with caring responsibilities, shift patterns, and people who may be nighttime and night owls more than morning larks.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what's interesting, if you want to know more about Kerry's story, her own backstory, go to episode 80. And if you're interested in nursing and dyslexia, Kerry's got a huge backstory and experience within nursing and university with that, episode 80. And then if you want to look at Kerry's special learning support through online video and how she uses online video for that, go to episode 81. Now, this is our third episode with you, Kerry, because you're just a gold mine of information and insights for people. And today's focus is access to work. And we've said this quite a few times so far, but we've not actually defined what access to work is. So what is access to work and why might it be useful to some of our UK listeners?
Okay, so I'm going to describe Access to Work in two ways. One for university students who have had disabled students allowances, and one for people who have never had that support. And the reason I do that is because if you've had disabled students allowances at university, it's a package of support, of human support, equipment, adjustments, and software. And if you've had disabled students allowances, the best way to describe it is Access to Work is disabled students allowances for the workplace.
Yes.
So that will really give people an inroad into that. Now, if you've never had Access to Work before, it is designed to keep disabled people in work or to get disabled people into work. And again, trying to keep the politics out of it, but that's also part of me, is in essence, it's you will become a productive member of society, you are less likely to need benefits. So actually Access to Work is probably a very cost-effective way for the government to support disabled people. Now we know the rates, for example, of people with autism is down sort of like to the 15% of an employment rate. So there is a massive gap in supporting people. There's a perception of, oh my gosh, how do we support somebody like that? It's going to be costly. And Access to Work is a way of addressing those issues of giving subsidised support and equipment or nil cost. So a lot of people, even if they know about Access to Work, they don't realise that other human support, which is what I do, one-to-one tuition and support and workplace coping strategies, and the training for the team or the organisations, the awareness training, is at nil cost.
It's quite remarkable. I mean, Kerry's immersed in all of this, but in very simple terms, you can go to a new job and you can say, actually, I need an iPad, an Apple Pencil, and some training to help me, you know, take notes in meetings and things like that, because I could really do with that. Now, an employer would normally say, right, well, we give you a computer and there's a desk and, you know, this is what you get on. But if you're dyslexic, for example, let's just take dyslexia because we're a dyslexia podcast, then you can go to your employer and say, actually, Access to Work, if you pay for it, the government will repay you and refund you all of that. And they can refund you a couple of £1,000 or £5,000 or a significant amount of money to help you get started, get the skills you need to really be productive in the job. Is that correct?
Yes, have I got that right? But it's even more exciting than that because one, it's not necessarily for a new job.
Okay.
It can be an identification, or it could be you declaring for the first time that you need support. So you can be established in a job and go, do you know what? I've been either hiding my disability or I've been okay.
Maybe they're listening to this podcast and they've been, I know a ton of you who are listening right now. I know because you've told me and you're like, oh my goodness, I got into this because of my daughter or child, son or relative. And then you say, oh my goodness, I think I'm dyslexic. Yeah. And so maybe you start thinking to yourself, gosh, dyslexia might actually be getting in my way here. Maybe I should go and get identified. Maybe it might help me in my workplace, because I know a number of people, they're care workers or they're designers, and they've kind of adapted and blagged their way to sort of
creatively
wiggle all the way through a bureaucratic system. But often you hit a pinch point and you're kind of like, I don't know why I can't get past this.
Well, that was my next point.
Yeah.
That
so this could point. Be something that helps them.
Yeah, absolutely. So that pinch point could be a promotion.
Yes.
Where often that happens with a lot of the nurses I support or the teachers I support, where they have been clinical facing and then they get a role that is more admin because they're in charge of a team, for example, or a head of department. It could be for a lot of people, it's been COVID. Mm. A lot of people have gone, you know, now I'm working from home. I'm going to have to tell my employer that I haven't got the setup at home that I need, or I haven't got the ways round. I haven't got that great printer in the corner where I can photocopy something quite surreptitiously and highlight it and do all my notes that way. I haven't got those tools. I haven't got that software, or I haven't got access to the inbuilt systems for example, that many organisations have, and people orientate themselves around, maybe it's the long way around, but they've got a certain pattern, like I press this button and then I do this and they get there eventually. And of course, that's all been taken away. So we've noticed a real increase since COVID of people declaring their disability, and also the added emotional demands and the well-being demands and school, so homeschooling, et cetera. They're all executive functioning skills, which we know are an area of challenge for people with dyslexia. We're having to juggle all of those things, as well as our own life patterns and our changes and looking after people and being frightened. So a lot of people have actually declared now, and then they've started the access to work process. So we've had a real big boost of influx of people.
So can I just clarify this? Because I know in Bullet Map Academy, we've got a number of doctors and also other professionals that get coaching. That's where we kind of overlap.
Yes, we do
children, teenagers, and adults. You very much concentrate on students and adults. We overlap, but our specialty is mind mapping. I noticed in reading the Access to Work material that you can declare it to your employer, but you don't have to declare it to everyone else.
Absolutely.
That you're working with, because there are some people who are still a little bit shy of telling others, especially depending on the dynamics in that environment, especially if they're doctors. Some doctors are really quite caustic with regard to other doctors who are dyslexic. They're playing the excuse card and all that kind of, you know, mindset, and people with dyslexia don't want to, you know, be seen to be playing some sort of excuse card or whatever, but they do actually need some help. So they speak directly to the employer, and the employer doesn't need to broadcast it to the rest of the people. So there is, it's not full disclosure necessarily as well. Not that I'm saying that that should be, I'm not encouraging that, because I think full disclosure is often better, but people still need to have that. It's not all or nothing, is it?
No, absolutely not. So the key thing that I'm just going back to a previous point. If you pick me up on that point again, I'll come back to it. But if I don't get this out of my head, I shall forget. So you were talking about the amount of money. So it's just been increased, and it's almost, it's around the £60,000 mark now.
Okay, so one person can claim up to £60,000.
Yes.
For reasonable adjustments in the workplace.
Yeah. And yeah. So this is where it sounds a little bit complex, but it's not. Okay. But if you apply within the first 6 weeks of work, often Access to Work fund the majority of everything.
And when you say majority, you're talking like 90%, 95%.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it does depend on the package and what they feel the workplace should provide as a standard reasonable adjustment.
Sometimes it's 100%, am I right?
Yes, absolutely. And it will be 100% when it's at that pre-6-week stage. So on the application form, which segues beautifully, it will say, have you started your job yet, yes or no? And then it will say, have you been there 6 weeks? Have you been there more than 6 weeks? And the reason that they do that is because it's a different funding route. It also depends on the size of the business. So if you're out there with a small business, don't worry. So for me, Phoebe's just had her Access to Work support, and we've had to contribute £214 to a package of support which was worth £4,500.
So the package of support for your new employee was £4,500, and you're a small business, and because it was within the first 6 weeks, you only have to contribute to 214.
Yeah. And so usually if you're a small business below, and if this is all on the Access to Work site, so if you're below, I think it's 10, but don't quote me on that, you don't have to pay any contribution towards it. Now the NHS, if I take that, because that's what I know really well, is a big organization, and it's not just the trust, they take the NHS as the whole organization.
Okay.
It has above a number of 1,000 employees, for example.
Okay.
So they will always have to pay if it's after 6 weeks, not before 6 weeks. So if you've declared once you've had the job, they will always have to pay a contribution.
Yeah, like proportionally, give us an idea how much.
So between £1,000 and £10,000, they will pay the first £1,000, and then approximately 20%.
Okay.
Of the next.
So it's kind of like an insurance policy. You play the first £1,000, what's it called? Excess.
Yes.
And then it's like 10% on the remainder.
Yes, but it's not 10%, but yes.
Oh, what
and
was
then
it?
From 10,000, yeah, yeah.
20%.
So from 10,000, so from 10,000 to the 60,000, there's no contribution. That's all taken care of. So again, the reason I'm mentioning this is if you've got, for example, I support somebody who's deaf and they need a British Sign Language interpreter, it may be that the business is going cha-ching, 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 how much is that going to cost me? But actually that's the between 10,000 and the top amount, which is about 60,000 now they've just put it up, is no contribution at all. So you're not penalized for needing human support, for example.
Yes.
So it's that first 10,000 that depends on what size your business is, because sometimes you have to contribute and it's different amounts depending on how big the business is.
Okay, let's just talk about small businesses right now.
Yes.
Okay. One of the questions I had was, since our last podcast, because by the way, we talked about this in the last podcast as well, episode 81, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was you can also do it if you're self-employed.
The joy, nobody knows this. So a lot of the clients I see are self-employed therapists. They're self-employed small business people, and a lot of artists I support as well, lots of entrepreneurs. And, you know, there's stats out there that say 60% of entrepreneurs have a neurodiverse profile because we can do things differently and we're creative. And so absolutely. So as a self-employed person, I got a package of access to work that involved, and then here we go, an extra monitor. Okay. This up and down desk. So I have an up and down, a sit stand desk. And that is because I have a back issue. It provided me with software called Dragon that speaks to me, which is where we get the crossover now. It's provided me with mind mapping software. I already have a preferred one, but they provided me with Mind View as well, because actually that has a Gantt chart on it and a timetable, which makes it very, very useful for small businesses. They provided me with Audio Note Taker, which I'd recommend to lots of people. Great for color coding sections of, they visually show you when people are talking, when they're not, and you can color code the blocks of audio. At the same time, you could have a slide, for example, slide one where the lecturer or the conference person is talking about it. So the audio is attached to the slide, and in the middle, you can make your own notes. And then you hit return, slide two comes up, the audio gets recorded for that, and then you can make your own notes and you can edit the audio, take it out of context. So it's an amazing tool.
You've got
for me,
monitor, desk, software, mind mapping, audio note taker.
Yep.
And did you get any kind of training, because you're a trainer? Do you
absolutely
need any training?
So I got training on this software. Okay. And the nice thing about that is usually what they'll do is there's a number of software companies, but they've normally got four or five that they always choose for ease of doing the assessment. However, and this is a really important point for you bullet pointers out there and those who are already using your software, is that you if you have an established relationship or a preference, you can declare that and say, actually, I don't want MindView, I don't want Inspiration, I want your product or this product. And you can say,
had a doctor say, I want an iPad and a pencil so I can handwrite my maps, and I want some training from Bullet Map Academy to teach me how to do it. And they go, right, we'll put that in there. And that gets included, because the person themselves, if they have their own way of working or a preferred way of working mm-hmm. on something, then the assessor works with that as well.
Yeah. So this is why I'm mentioning it here, because we have amazing word of mouth. And often people within the same organization will go, oh God, I've had Kerry and she's amazing. And they'll go, oh, actually, or they've paid for me privately. And then we've talked about it. I've gone, do you know about Access to Work? And they could pay for me. And they're like, oh my God, that would be amazing. And then we've gone through the Access to Work, and Access to Work have paid me rather than the private individual of the company or themselves to who's just been promoted.
Yes.
So that's really important. So what it says in the assessment, and we'll go back because we've missed a step, but what they say in assessment, it will give you a list of suppliers. You do not have to have that supplier. Okay, so that's really important. Access to Work make no recommendations. There's no suppliers list. The assessor who assesses you will just be choosing potentially suppliers that they know well or suppliers that the person has asked for. So if you see, for example, it says Bullet Point Academy is what you want, but it says Inspiration and your training is 2.5 days at, I don't know, so say £100 because it's just easy, £100, you can go, well, actually, if Bullet Point Academy, I've got £300 now. So you can approach them and say, well, actually, I'm going to put my receipt in for Bullet Point Academy at £299.99. And they'll be like, that's fine, because it's below the cheapest quote. So you don't have to go with what your assessor says if you've got a preferred product.
Yes. So the general principle there would be, oh, you need to do mind mapping. We have this mind mapping software, but you can come and go, yeah, I do need to do mind mapping, but I prefer doing it by hand. I want to do it with this, and I want to get trained by these people who specialize by hand-drawn mind mapping.
Yeah, and just like for workplace coping strategies, which is the one-to-one provision I provide, they can say, I would like diverse learners. I've got an established relationship, or I know that they specialize. We're one of the cheapest in the country, so it makes it very easy for people to do that. But you don't actually have to ask permission of anybody.
Yes.
You go.
So you just state that, because yeah, that's brilliant. So you just need to request it and they write down that request.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Because there's this kind of confusing step, okay, that, forgive me. So let's just do a recap, guys.
Yeah, okay? I think we've missed a step between the assessment and that.
let's create a story, Kerry.
Yes.
Okay. So Bob. Okay.
Yes.
No, let's go. It's always
let's
a
go
man.
With you.
Let's go with a girl, okay? Let's go with Mary.
No, I'm just thinking, why don't we go with you've just got a new employee.
I've got a new employee. All right then. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a new employee. She's Rosie. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Rosie's my new employee. What do I need to know?
So what Rosie has done is Rosie's decided that she needs access to work. So she's gone on the gov.uk website, which we'll put all the links in afterwards.
Okay.
She's opened the form and she's seen that she's eligible. She's completed the form. Top tip about the form, get them to contact you via email. Don't tick phone. If they phone you 3 times and you're not in or you don't answer, you have to start the whole process again. So make sure you do it via email and then you've got 5 days to respond. Okay, so that's the first tip. So they have to, on that form, put who their employer is and their line manager.
Okay.
But at that point, you haven't told, nobody's told anybody anything.
Okay.
It goes to Access to Work. Access to Work give you a phone call and it's an identity check, in essence. Who are you? Have you
gives Rosie a phone call.
Yeah, it gives Rosie a phone call. And Rosie goes, yes, I live this stress. This is my approach. And they'll go, okay, that's fine. You were eligible. You can now have an assessment.
Okay.
And that's done separately. That's not Access to Work. They've tendered that out. Okay. The exciting thing about it is that once you've filled in the form, they have to contact you within 3 weeks.
Okay.
So it's reasonably quick. And I can probably guarantee they'll contact you on day 21.
Okay.
So make sure you put that in your calendar. When you filled in the form, put it in your calendar to remind yourself to chase it up if they don't contact you.
Okay.
They will ask Rosie explicit permission once they've said she's eligible, if they can then share that she's applied for Access to Work with her employer.
Okay.
And at that point... She goes, Darius, I've got Access to Work. Or it might come through the fact that Access to Work contact them and go, we have an employee of yours called Rosie who wants to do Access to Work. Is that okay? And of course, you will say.
I will say yes.
Absolutely. So then it goes to an assessment and that is tendered out to about 4 or 5 companies. But the brilliant thing about that is that they have a KPI, so a key performance indicator, that they have to contact you and offer you a session within 5 days.
Okay.
And that assessment will then be a discussion about what equipment you might need, what adjustments might you need to your working pattern, what software you might need. So that would be my Dragon and my Claro for reading it out to me and my audio note taker. My equipment was my desk, my cordless headphones that I'm wearing now, my noise cancelling headphones, my bed tray, because I work a lot from bed, my Surface Pro and pen. So all of this was paid for via Access to Work and my second monitor and a whole load of other stuff as well. So, and often if it's a really good assessor, they'll go, well, how do you cope with this? And how do you cope with that? And you might go, oh, actually, I really struggle. So the other thing for you self-employed people out there, as well as those people who attend a designated workplace, is there's also taxi affairs included. So if you have dyslexia and another condition that is maybe a physical condition that makes it difficult for you to use public transport, or anxiety, for example, or autism, or fibromyalgia, something like that, often look into taxis. So I get a taxi allowance of £20,000 a year. I just want everybody to sink in that, okay?
Whoa!
Absolutely.
£20,000?
Up to £20,000 a year taxi allowance. And okay, that is because as a person who has dyspraxia, asthma, ADD, sensory processing disorder, celiac, and a back issue, and a number of other things, traveling for me is very challenging. It's never the presentation in front of 300 people. It's the getting to the hotel, finding the hotel, finding the room I'm meant to be presenting in that causes me all the stress. So for some sessions, I will travel in my car if I know they're nice and close and I know the place really well. And they'll designate me a disabled parking space because I am eligible on the blue badge. A lot of people with dyspraxia are now, and autism, mental health issues are eligible under the new blue badge scheme. Not 100% sure if that's in Scotland, but you guys are normally much better than us anyway in England. So I expect that's probably the same for you. And so what that means is that then I can be greeted by somebody and they can take me to the place and it reduces my anxiety. I'm a much better presenter because I don't arrive all sweaty, all anxious, not knowing where I am, and all of that stuff people don't associate with me because I am a very capable person who's written research papers, who presents to lots of people, who advises the Royal College of Nursing. But all that kind of executive functioning stuff is really challenging for me. So if I'm going to somewhere else and I'm having to take a couple of changes on a train, I will check my ticket a million times. I will get very anxious. I will struggle with the stairs. How do I get my equipment up there if the lift is broken? All of those kind of things. So they pay me for door-to-door taxis.
Fantastic.
So I got a door-to-door taxi to Oxford to present at a big conference. They paid for a hotel for the night for me, and then also access to work. And then I got a taxi all the way home.
Kerry.
Melts your brain, doesn't it?
I've got one big problem here with all
right,
of this.
Okay.
Okay. And it's a very practical problem.
Yeah.
I would be a homeless bum sleeping on the street if it wasn't for my wife. Yes. I've got a law degree. I'm the CEO of a company. You know, I've achieved lots of different successes in life, but all the way along, my wife's helped me fill out forms.
Do you want a bit of nice, exciting news about that?
I'm setting you up here for, can you solve this problem? Because I can tell you, there'll be people listening to this going, oh my goodness, that sounds amazing. But I will fall at the very first hurdle because I won't fill in that form on the government website because I'm terrified of forms.
So the government website one is a nice form. I'm going to give you another hint. So you know
I'm
that little tip
scared
I gave?
Of the form.
I'm not going to be scared of the form. You're not going to be scared of the form because you're going to open the form because it's one question per page. So it's not a form like a PDF form. It's like an electronic form, which is one question per page.
Okay.
The other reason you're not going to be scared of the form is because they provide a service that helps you fill the form in.
Oh, good. Tell me about that. How does that work?
So again, you
contact... Can I talk to someone and they do it for me?
Well, that's what I do with a lot of my clients. Absolutely.
Can they call you up because you're very nice?
Yeah, they can call me up. So there's a little on the actual website. It says, if you have problems filling this form, for example, if you're visually impaired and it's not a Braille version or something like that, give us a call and we will help you fill it in. So the actual form, you know, if you've ever done Amazon, for example, if you've ever done an online shopping company.
Don't mind about Amazon. Hold on. I'm going to pause you for a minute, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're saying is, I don't have to actually face the form. I could just phone up a person, make a call, speak to them on the phone, and they'll fill it in for me.
Yeah.
Okay, absolutely. That's all I wanted to know.
However, people want to be a bit more independent than that. But if you've ever done like an Amazon shop where you've done a search for a product, then you've put it in your basket, then you've had to check out, then you've had to put your name in and your credit card details, it's very much like that. It's one per page.
Okay. Good.
And also another top tip is it asks you on there, do you know what will help you? Just put no. If you don't know, just put no. Just put no and yes. Don't fill any of the info boxes if that's going to be too overwhelming.
Okay.
Takes you about 10 to 15 minutes regularly. So it's not a scary form And it's very basic information. And if you don't know, just put don't know. So the first thing is, what's your disability or condition? And you fill that in the box.
I got a question on that one as well.
Yes. Right? Oh, I got a really exciting answer. If I think I know what you're going to ask me.
Okay. Because I think I read in the paper that you don't actually need an assessment of dyslexia to do it. And I'm kind of like, oh, I'm going to have to get my head around that one.
Absolutely.
How do they square that circle? Like, listeners right now, I tell you, there's at least 100 people right now who are listening going, I could do that, but I don't have an assessment. And that's a whole nother hurdle. What do they do?
Well, unlike disabled students allowances, where you have to have a very particular assessment with a very set criteria on headed note paper and wet signatures and all of this kind of stuff, you need, it's about having a need. So if you think you have a need, that's why they say, what is your disability or condition? Okay, so if you have a need, so you have a health need, a heart issue that makes you more fatigued, you would be eligible for access to work, because it might be that you getting a taxi to work rather than having to take the bus would make a massive difference to your retention. You're not going to be ill as often. So the employer pays a contribution to that, like the 45p a mile. It's just that contribution. So they would pay that if you would bring in your own car and working for work that way. So this is what's really exciting about access to work. And that's why 1% of people who are eligible, that's why it's such a low number, because 1% of people who are eligible who have a need or a long-term condition often don't class themselves as having a disability or a need, because they get around it, like your wife filling in the forms for you.
Okay, so you're a very big picture thinker here, and I can see you're thinking about the whole of neurodiversity. So forgive me if I keep bringing this back down to dyslexia, okay? But this all applies to everything else, dysgraphia, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, whatever condition. But let's just say dyslexia, okay? I'm thinking about one person who's a listener right now, who's probably listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
He's a carer, okay? He knows he has dyslexia. He knows he has these challenges and issues. He knows that he's tried to do this exam 3 times in a row, and it's a basic exam, but keeps failing it. And he knows it's because of his dyslexia. He knows the stuff, but there's something really stopping him. He doesn't have the skills to actually study it and get it across the line, right? But he doesn't have a dyslexia assessment. What does he do?
Well, he can apply. Well, if he's a carer, a paid carer, rather than, so I was a carer, as you know.
Paid carer in a care company, in a nursing home. Yeah.
There we go. So often what happens is, if you want to progress in that kind of field, you need to do your health and safety, your manual handling, all of those kind of things. Often they're online and often they're not terribly friendly. Okay. However, if you apply for access to work, you would get software that would read the information to you. You could get software that you could then dictate the answers into. I'm getting there, I promise you, dictate the answers into. And also, it may be in the assessment might put a recommendation for an alternative assessment process. So for example, I've arranged for people to do it verbally, like a Viva. So I'll ask you the questions, tell me the answers.
An alternative assessment process for the actual exam.
Yes.
Oh, I've got you.
And that can be written by the assessor. Yes.
Okay.
No, it's for work, and that's the crucial thing. So okay, that's why I mentioned that. Yeah.
My main problem with that this person will have is they don't have a dyslexia assessment, so they don't feel that they're entitled. How do they prove that dyslexia is an issue for them to the assessor?
They don't have to, because that is what that initial. You fill in the form and say, what are your needs? Then the person then phones you up from access to work and checks your needs. Okay. And then the assessor is there to assess what your needs are. And if you have a piece of paper that says, oh, I have dyslexia, then that's one thing, but you don't need it. And that's what the beauty of it is. A lot of people are barred from support because they have to pay £40 for a doctor's letter, or they have to pay £500 for a dyslexia assessment.
Yes.
But access to work is about a leveler. It's about people keeping people in work.
And also keeping people progressing through work.
Yes, because the more you contribute. Potential.
Because I see this all the time. Like, I mean, it pains me. It hurts me every time an adult calls me up and says, look, I'm 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen over the last 10 years, I've seen people who are not as smart as me, not as competent as me, progress up all the way through the scholarly range. Mm-hmm. I'm still on a 20-year-old, 25-year-old salary range. I'm 50 years old, and there's people being paid 10 grand, 15 grand more than me a year. And I just simply can't get past this threshold of this assessment. And it's not because I don't know my stuff. I just don't know how to do that academic bit and get past it. And it's dyslexia getting in their way. And it's literally costing them 10 grand a year in lost salary. And what's more, it's one of the employers really need very competent people. There's a scarcity of really competent staff in this world. But if you can't express your intelligence in writing, you come across as incompetent. Whereas actually you're very competent, you're just not showing it in the written word. So if you can find techniques that can help you get yourself expressed in a test or in a report and in documentation that's required in your job, and there's tons of techniques for doing that with dyslexia, if you can find those techniques, you can then unlock so many layers of salary upgrades.
And that's what the Access to Work package can give you. So it can give you, I think it's wider. So I understand where you're coming from, but if you've got Bob, who's the carer, if Bob has software that he can dictate the answers to, it might make him 2% more proficient. I would go for more. If Bob has software that will then read the test to him in an accent he likes. So Claro, for example, has Scottish accents. I love Claro. They've got Heather, who's got a beautiful Scottish lilt, and it makes me feel like I'm at home again. So that read to it, that's 2%. If they could then have an adjustment so they could tint the screen, that might be 2%. So it might be that it's that 6% that they're needing in order to pass the exam. They keep getting 24 and they have to get 30, for example. So then you've got workplace stroke coping strategies training from somebody like me, who can then go through them with the test and go, when they say this, that's decoding the question. Actually, what is the question they're asking? How can we put an answer down there that will get you the points that isn't necessarily very verbose?
Yes, so it's almost because like one of the problems with dyslexia is you expand the scope too much.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
You're such wide-angled thinker. You've got they ask this question and there's a simple answer, but you make it so complex that it's huge. And you're like, well, there's three or four or five different ways of doing it with this circumstance. And they're like, they're not asking for that.
No,
they're asking for this.
It's the same with multiple choice questions. Yeah. So, for example, there's a multiple choice question. What that is, it's a strategy. You know, you need a skill in order to work out that that's a double negative. And that means it's not that one. You know, you can. So this is all the sort of stuff. Plus, you know, you've got the job coaching. You've got the software, the mind map to do the revision. You've got the hardware to make sure it's easier for you, maybe on a mind map, on an iPad or something similar, or an extra screen. So you've got the question on one side and you can work out your answers on the other. You could have somebody you dictate to, software or person to dictate to, and you can have a scribe like you could in exams. So there's lots of different ways. I think that's why I'm doing the big picture, because I often think it's not necessarily one little element that helps you pass the professional qualification. And it's very important when you talk to the assessor, if you're knowledgeable about what sort of courses you might need to be doing, and to emphasize the workness of them rather than the university of them. So if you're going to an apprentice, you qualify for Access to Work, but you don't qualify for disabled students allowances because it's work-based learning.
I see. Gosh, and there's so many apprentices out there that I've met who are like, you know, I'm a really great mechanic, I'm a really great joiner, really great plumber, but when it comes to this particular thing, you know, I keep tripping up, and that's, you know, blocking me. You know, they're locked out of progressing into becoming a professional. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. I've got a big question that's burning in the back of my brain, okay?
Yeah.
I'm the employer, okay?
Yeah, with Rosie.
With Rosie. She's made her application. She's gone to her assessor and she says, I believe I'm dyslexic. I don't have a report, but I find difficulty with this. I find difficulty with that. And so the assessor goes, well, if you have difficulty with that, whether you're dyslexic or not, you still need help with that. So we're going to give you help with that. You don't need a label to get help for a difficulty. If it's a difficulty, it's a difficulty. And if there's a solution, we'll give you the solution, because the goal is to make you productive. So she gets all of those things. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Assessment.
In the assessment, the assessor says, what does the assessor say? I recommend X, Y, Z, A, B, so and
the
C.
Yeah, so the assessor will probably tell you roughly what they're going to do. Okay. The assessor then makes a report that then says, oh, you could have this piece of equipment at this price, or you could have this trainer at this price. And it looks like a big price list, really.
Okay.
Okay. Then once the person goes, oh, yes, that's what I would really like, they send it back to them and go, yes, I agree with everything like that. There's nothing missing. And then a copy gets sent to the employer. Your Rosie, Darius, here's your letter. Rosie has got an extra monitor, an up-down desk, and this is what your expected contribution to it is. And at that point, your employer goes, yes, that's fine. I don't know, an employer, if you're an employer who thinks, I don't want something at 80% cost that's going to make my employee more effective and more efficient, do much more in less time, have less time off. Also, it's the business asset. So the business, you, Darius, have purchased it as Bullet Map Academy. Yeah.
Okay.
So therefore, if Rosie was then to go, do you know what? I want a different job. That you could, as an employer, give them a golden handshake and say, take your equipment with you. Equally, you keep it as an asset to the company. So therefore, if anybody else came along and needed an iPad and a software and all the rest of it, you've already got it.
Got you. So they send me the bill. Okay.
Yeah.
And on the bill, it says, you're going to pay $4,500 for this, but you're going to get refunded $4,250 and you'll end up paying $250 in total.
Or it might be.
That's my big question. Actually, the big question is, I'm the employer. When do I get paid back?
Right.
And
okay.
Will it happen? I'm scared.
Yes.
That the government comes along and goes, well, actually, you've got to fill in this form. You've got to fill in that form. You've got to jump over hoops. You've got to stay at midnight and stay outside of this.
And
we're not actually going to give it to you. Yeah. We just promised it to you. Oh, actually, you might get it in 4 years' time. And I'm like, my cash flow can't manage that.
Okay. Beautiful question. And I've got all the answers. Okay.
Okay.
This is often where it falls down in a big organization, because nobody takes responsibility for, because one person needs a finance and they need a purchase order, and then the purchase order needs, and that's sometimes where it gets lost, particularly in the NHS. But, you know, I'm going to tell you all about that too. So if they've been in their job, so maybe, because you won't be able to pay very little because Rosie's been in the job less than 6 weeks. If Rosie had been in the job more than 6 weeks, excuse me, and you've got up to 49 employees, you won't have to pay a share unless it's considered an asset to the company. Sometimes, for example, an iPad or a laptop is, but that's usually the only thing, i.e. if they leave, you've still got the iPad
or
the laptop. That's usually the contribution, half and half. Not always. If you've got a employees with 50 to 249, they pay the first £500 and then 20% of the costs up to £10,000 and nothing between £10,000 and £60,000.
Okay.
And if you've got than 200, I'm getting there. You've got more than 250, they pay the first £1,000 and 20% of the costs up to £10,000.
Got you.
And Access to Work pay everything after that. Now, there is a reclaim process.
Yes.
And
how
it's
does
very,
that work?
Well, one of the things I would recommend, especially to small people with less than 49 people in there, you know, small companies and micro businesses, ask for pro forma invoices from the suppliers.
Pro forma.
And that means you send that to Access to Work, and Access to Work pay them directly. So you don't have to worry about any of that reclaiming of the monies.
Oh, my goodness. Really? Now, that's the sticking point. And it doesn't explain it on any of the websites.
That's because they haven't spoken to me. So so often for small, particularly if you're self-employed.
Let's say you're self-employed.
And
I bet
just
there's somebody who's listening just now. I'm self-employed. Yeah. And you know what? I've just discovered I'm dyslexic. I do need this up, down. I do need the laptop.
I just don't have the cash.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So pro forma invoices. So what will happen is that they will normally choose the cheapest quote on the assessment where it has all the prices. So you can say, oh, actually, ABC Communications are charging £1,500 for this piece of software. I'm going to phone them up. There's all the email addresses and everything. I'll phone them up. as Darius, not the employee. It's very important that it's not the employee, and I'll talk to you about that because there's case law on this.
Okay, so Rosie needs to call up the supplier.
No, Rosie should not be involved at all. It should be you.
Oh, you said not your, the employee. Oh,
not
so
the employee. Yes, not
it
needs the employee.
To be the employer.
Or the finance person or the purchasing order or whatever.
So
yep. They
I
must
call
do
up
that.
The company, got you.
Yep. And say, can I have a pro forma invoice because I've got access to work? Often there's a reference number. You quote the customer reference number of your employee. Yeah. Which normally starts with 100 and then a whole load of other numbers. And they'll go, oh, yes, we've got that on our system. Here's a pro forma invoice. And they send you the pro forma invoice. You then, or some companies are even more gorgeous. They'll send the pro forma invoice straight to Access to Work for you.
Okay.
And therefore, Access to Work pay that. So what we do with a lot of small companies is that we say it's going to be £1,000 worth of coping strategies. And therefore, we do the pro forma, send it to Access to Work. And Access to Work pay it straight into our bank account.
And then you call them up and you go, hey, we've just been paid. It's time to book your first session. Yeah. Let's get going.
Yeah, absolutely.
How long does it take for the Access to Work to pay for it then?
Access to Work don't take long. What the stumbling block always is the employer getting their head round the amount of money isn't the amount of money. So if it's like, oh my gosh, there's £10,000 worth we're going to have to spend on this client, on our employee.
Okay.
They go, oh my God, it's £10,000. They don't go, oh, £7,000 of that is reclaimable, for example. They often see the amount and then start going, oh, do we really need this? And that's where in big organizations, not in small organizations, but in big organizations, because there's somebody in finance, there's somebody in purchasing, that's sometimes where it can fall down. But I'm just saying that so people are aware.
Yeah. So let's go to the care home. Okay. Yes. So the care home, it's a small care home.
Yeah.
They've got less than 50 staff.
Yeah.
Okay. Bob has just declared that he has dyslexia. He reckons he's got these difficulties.
Yeah.
The care home is amenable.
Yep.
And he applies to Access to Work, phones them up, fills in the form, Access to Work, call them 3 weeks later. He then gets the assessment a week later. They get in touch with the company, with the care home, and say, here are the things that we think Bob would need to up his game and become more productive for you. Up his game is maybe not the right phrase, actually, but, you know, what would be the right phrase?
This will help Bob's retention and his well-being at work.
Okay. And so then the person who does the finances inside of the care company sees this shopping list in front of them, and they're just told by the assessor that they're probably due, let's say Bob needs $4,500 worth of stuff. That's equipment and training, for example. Yeah. Equipment, software, and training.
Yeah.
Are you saying that it's likely that they might have to pay a contribution of, say, £450?
I mean, that's why I said it depends on how what the equipment is. And I'm just,
ballpark, say they've got somewhere between $450.
You can't really pay more than $3,000. If you're a company more than 250 employees and you're paying 20% up to £10,000, you're only paying 20% between £2,000 and £10,000.
Okay, so it's £1,000 plus £2,000 is £3,000 max.
Yeah, so that's how I've got that. So really, for £10,000 worth of goods and equipment, you're only paying £3,000.
Okay.
And that's only for goods and equipment because all the human support is reclaimable.
100%.
So 100% reclaimable if you're getting training on your academy.
Okay.
100% reclaimable for the training.
Fascinating.
100% because I do a lot of awareness training through
because
Access to Work.
A lot of people, they don't really want a huge amount of tech.
No.
They're like, look, I've got the mind map software. I've got this. I've got that. I'm just overwhelmed by how to actually use the tech. Because
and so
a lot
the reason
of people
that,
think
yeah.
they you give them a tech, off you go, Bob's your uncle.
You know,
just
that's my big thing.
Or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
This button does this button does that. Yeah, you'll be fine now. And that's where we overlap because I'm a workplace coping strategies worker is what they call it. And there's also another couple of things I need to tell you, but I'm the workplace coping strategy person. So I can help you apply all this new equipment and your current strategies to issues that you are having. So somebody might be saying, I've got a real issue with handover. And we will do a whole load of strategies that may include some of that software, may include some of that hardware. So
yes.
There's a C pen. I've recently got a C scan pen,
yes.
Which you run it across the words and it reads the words to you. So yes. You can be portable on a ward, pick up somebody's notes, run the pen across it, and it will read it to you.
Yes.
Fantastic piece of software. I've negotiated with the NHS trusts that they need a particular type of pen because of the storage concerns they have. Oh, it's storing the data. So they have to choose a particular pen that it does exactly the same job. It just doesn't store the data.
I bet you're going to say it's the exam pen that doesn't
save the... Yeah. But they've just relaunched it and they're not calling it the exam pen anymore for workplace. They've called it blue. So it's not bright orange and really noticeable.
Okay.
It's looks about the size of a thermometer.
Okay.
And they're calling it like just a C pen. So the idea that or a scanning pen. So that's really important for people to know.
Yes.
And this is why I'm trying to inform people. This isn't about scaring people. This is about if your employer comes to you and goes, oh, look at all this money, you need to be knowledgeable enough to say all the human support, all the awareness training, all the training on the software. Is it nil cost to you? You can either get a pro forma invoice from the company and you don't have to do all the paperwork, or you pay for it and then there's a form Access to Work send you that needs to be filled in, a receipt attached and sent via post. I know, via post back to usually the Wolverhampton head office.
Okay.
And so that's why the employees shouldn't get involved.
Okay.
Because soon as they do, the burden of all of that tends to go on the employee.
Okay. So the lady in the care home... Mm-hmm. Or the man in the care home doing the finances gets this shopping list of, let's just say it's all training.
Yeah.
Hypothetically, just
all
training and that's it. Okay. Yeah. They then call the people on the list.
Yeah. Or email them. Yeah.
Or email them and say, hey, look, can you send us a pro for Bullet Map Academy?
Yeah.
What's the name of your company again?
Diverse Learners.
Diverse Learners. Let's say it says Diverse Learners on it as well. Diverse Learners, £750 worth of training. Diverse Learners, you're on this list. Could you send me a proforma invoice with this code on it, please? Mm-hmm. Yes, we can. And you would then say, if you're really good at it, which you are, you'd say, do you want us to send it to the DWP for you?
Yeah.
And they go, oh, that'll save me the admin. Yeah, sure. No problem. Great. It goes to the DWP. And then the DWP... How long would it take for the DWP to pay you?
If it's that way, it's usually quite quick. It's usually within about fortnight.
Okay.
And the thing that takes a time is when it goes back to this person and they pay it, they have to get it all signed off. Then somebody has to fill in the form and put the receipt and send it to Access to Work to get it refunded. What tends to happen is that last stage tends to get missed in big organizations because nobody's taking responsibility for it.
Okay,
so again, I'm trying to say to the employee, if they come to you and go, oh, well, we spent all this money on you, you can then go, well, actually, you could claim it all back.
Yes.
That's not their responsibility. So there is case law that says you should not ask the employee to purchase the equipment, do the receipts and all the rest of it.
Okay.
Because it's an unfair burden. Actually, what happens is you think about, and I use the word burden deliberately, because if you think the hours it might take somebody to do that, that's hours they're not doing at their job.
Yes.
So therefore, they might be not meeting their goals and their quotas because they're spending 3 hours doing their Access to Work forms and purchasing the equipment, etc.
Yes. Okay. So the person in the most ideal scenario, the person in the care home calls up emails your company and says, please send us this, emails my company, please send us this, emails another company for that particular aspect of training, etc. And then when does the member of staff know that they can start getting that support?
Well, because we're very good, we ask them for the contact details of the member of staff and ask them, can we contact them directly and set up training with them? The company normally goes, oh, yes, please do. It's an extra step we don't want. Some organisations say no. due to GDPR, we haven't actually asked them permission to do that yet. So it really depends. And so what we have with some employers, so for example, if we've got an established relationship with a particular individual or the employer, we will say, can we have an email from your company saying we honour this amount of money and we will pay you when we get refunded from Access to Work? And that's how we do it. Because otherwise there could be a delay. If it's a big company, it can get lost, and that could be a 6-week delay before it's gone. So we send a quote, and then some people come back to us and go, right, the quote's been accepted, now send us an invoice with this purchase order on it. That then goes back into the system. Then somebody has to sign that off. Then somebody has to actually say that's the money. Then somebody has to reclaim the money. And in the big organizations like the NHS, for example, it can get lost. But we're always, once we're involved, we're like, in our workplace coping strategies, we go, have you checked that, you know, they've filled that form in? Have you forwarded those forms to them? Have you checked that this and that or the other? So I've had some companies who have like not reclaimed the monies, and it's like cost them $8,000, but they've gone, well, we're fine with that.
Okay. Phew. Fantastic.
There's only one more thing I just wanted to...
We've gone through the whole process to get the basic overview. What else is there, Kerry, that we need to know?
Well, you also need to know that awareness training is part of the human support. So
what is awareness training?
So it could be dyslexia awareness training. So I've just trained an NHS trust in the east of Scotland, and their employee had dyslexia and dyspraxia. And there were some concerns in that NHS trust that person, you know, it's a very typical story. They've been practicing as a nurse for a very long time. They get the identification and all panic breaks out. So they asked me to go in and do some awareness training. And I actually and so there was a set amount of money for me to provide that awareness training. And then I worked on a bespoke package, because we don't do out the tin, let's give it to everybody. We do a bespoke package that met the needs of the person and the department. And we trained nearly 90 people in two hospices, and they all had dyspraxia and dyslexia awareness training. So that
I
meant...
I bet you... So let me just get my head around this. Yeah. One person...
Yeah.
Declared, I need help.
Yeah.
They got some help. And part of that help wasn't just to help them personally. It was to help their colleagues understand them and in general. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So part of the package was for you to go in there and do that training. And you, I know what you did was you, during COVID, you said, well, I'm not going to inconvenience them. But, you know, if they're having a lunch break, if after this or after that, you know, you did it in small groups and so on, and fitted it around their schedule rather than inconveniencing everyone and probably embarrassing that person.
Well, that person wasn't involved at all. So nobody knew that training was for that person.
Oh, that's good to know. Tell me more about
So this is why I was talking about it. So the awareness training is the awareness training. It doesn't say this is awareness training for Rosie. This is the awareness training for Bob, unless that person. So I have team presented with some of my clients who go, do you know what? I've had some client, I want to present with you, Kerry, and tell them what it's really like in my life. I've had other people who have been in the audience, and halfway through they felt confident enough to go, oh, everybody, this is about me. You know, when I did that in that meeting, that's what that all was about, for example.
Right.
And some people don't want to be involved at all. And this is why I always do as a bespoke package.
Okay.
What are the problems that are cropping up at work? And let's address those particular ones for the individual or for the trust. And the reason it's the trust is because I'm a big picture thinker. And I'm saying, well, you can have your team, but actually that person's team is an MDT team, a multidisciplinary team. So it's got a physio and an OT. They work across two hospices. So that's double the amount of people. Do you know what? Their trust is their employee. They're working with lots of people in the trust. Let's do the awareness training for the whole trust.
Fantastic. And I bet you that the people you did the awareness training from, there's a proportion goes, oh my goodness, that's
Absolutely.
Me. Are you talking about me? And you're not specifically talking about them, but they start to become self-aware to realize that, oh my goodness, I've got some difficulties that keep tripping me up that you've just mentioned.
Absolutely. Or people go, oh, can you help my son or my daughter? Or I've always thought my daughter was like this. Or, you know, so I do get people, and I'm quite happy to do that because I really believe in the awareness, because somebody was that generous to me with their time. So I like to pay that forward. You know, if it wasn't for the occupational therapist in my department and I went, I've just read this report and it says about dyspraxia, and my God, that's my life on a page, that exact phrase. And they went, oh, I think I knew you had dyspraxia within about 30 seconds of meeting you. Learn more about that on episode 80. But the key thing there was that that person explained in a way to me what it was. And then I looked at my kids and went, oh, I think there's something else going on here. So it's really actually a talking point. And then it actually means that everybody in that department is now there aware. So that means they might not have to declare because things are being done in the organization in a very dyslexic friendly way. And that person might not need to declare anymore.
Well, I want to just round this huge episode off.
There's still more. Can I very quickly, a quick one. If you're self-employed or if you're high up in an organization, there is such a thing called a job aid, which can 20% of your hours can be performed by a job aid to do all those kind of executive function skills, timetabling people, invoicing, supporting you, and they can work quite independently. And then an enabler can work
No, that's too fast.
Yeah, sorry.
Wow, I'm just having
I'm so excited, that's why.
just wait for my brain to go boom, because I've read that, but hearing you say it, so basically what you're saying is, let me translate that.
Yeah.
I'm a CEO of a company, or I'm an executive or something.
Or like, you're an independent person and it's you and one other person, or you, just yourself. Yeah.
Right. And you realize that you've got executive functioning challenges, dyslexia and executive functioning challenges, which I do. And I go, you're basically saying I can get 20 hours, a person
20%
part-time.
Of your hours.
20% of my hours.
Yeah.
So I'm working 60 hours a week. So, okay, say 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
So that's 8 hours in the week.
Yeah, per week.
Per week. Can be done by someone else for me, all the administrative tough stuff that takes me forever.
Yeah, you have to direct them, but they can work independently to you. So you know that horrible form? You could do that form with that person. So you could talk that person and go, that's the bit that needs to be filled in. If it was maybe invoicing or inputting information into an Excel document is nearly impossible for me because I'm dyspraxic and it all just kind of like melts my brain. It might be opening post, it might be doing printing, it might be collating all the stuff for a conference or a workshop, all of those stuff that takes us so much energy that other people go like, why is that a big deal for you? Why have you put that off? Why haven't you done that? Well, because it feels so big.
Yeah, I can literally waste, not do those eight hours and then waste another 20 hours of my productive time doing those 8 hours that my wife can get done in four.
Yeah.
And it's taken me, you know, two or three full days instead. So what you're saying is, who pays for those 8 hours?
Well, what is it? Is human support?
Human support, yeah.
So what do we know about human support?
It's completely covered.
Yeah. And so what they will normally do is they'll either allocate you somebody through a company, or if you've got a personal person that you've got in mind, they will look at what the average rate of that job is in your area. So in my area, it's £12 an hour, and they will pay the equivalent of £12 an hour. So you can employ somebody at £15 an hour and you're only paying £3 if it's a preferred person, for example, or it can go through an organisation.
So you could say, hey, Philip is really good at all that admin stuff. He's already there. But what we're going to do, Darius, Philip is going to do 8 hours a week of that admin. It's going to be ring fence for you. Philip's 15 quid an hour at the moment, but they pay £12.50, you know?
Now, you've got to be careful if it's somebody already designated in your business. It's got to be not somebody who's doing it for you already. So if you're already employed an admin person, you've got to be careful with that, because it's about, the differential is about what's business admin and what is your admin for the business. Does that make sense?
So
a job aid would also kind of like set me, you know,
extra admin. Yes. So it's the extra admin that comes as a result of my disability and my difficulty.
Or the stuff that is a barrier for you that's very difficult to do.
Okay.
And so you could do stuff together. You could dictate and they could fill in the form, for example.
Okay, I've got you.
Yeah.
So you could have, like, say, a day a week where it's the Philip. Okay, so Philip day, you know.
Yeah.
Mondays, Philip and I work alongside each other. I go, oh, Philip, I've got this to do and so on. And he's he's working on his thing and clarifying and so on, like I sometimes do with my own PA. So you could go out and get a Philip, you know?
Or you could have one allocated to you through an organizer, through one of the organizations like, that they reference.
They don't have to work in your company. They could
no,
be a remote
worker. No, that's the difference
worker.
Between a job aid and an enabler. So a job aid is 20% of your hours. And it could be like, you know, the whole, you know, like organizing your papers. So if you've got a huge pile of papers, et cetera. Or it could be at the beginning of the week, you say, I've got a template email. Can you send this template email to all of these different people for me? Here's a list of people. And then they would take care of that.
This sounds just too good to be true.
I have somebody who's a single employed person, self-employed person, who has just got 800 hours a year.
Of assistance.
So the enabler is a slightly different role. The enabler has to be with you. The job aid can work remotely.
Now,
and you can
are we moving away from dyslexia here and probably moving towards something that someone who needs more physical enablement?
Yeah, well, yes and no. So if you have dyslexia, so the reason I mention this is because you very rarely just have dyslexia.
Yeah, okay.
Dyslexia fits with mental health issues, yeah. ADHD, physical issues, for yes. example, or dyslexic traits because you have fibromyalgia, for example. So this is why I feel that I've got a duty to kind of put this in. I know it's not specifically, but...
No, I love it. It's great. Yeah. It's great. But I'm just helping the listeners. I'm taking it from the listener's point of view that... Yeah. You know, thinking, how would this relate to dyslexia? But you're expanding it to saying you're not just one particular thing. You might have some other, my daughter's, for example, has ME, you know.
Yeah, so an enabler would be great for her. So an enabler.
What's an enabler?
Well, I'm going to tell you, can work with you for 100% of the time. So that's really exciting. Okay. So therefore, if you were a wheelchair user.
Okay, I'm just having another.
I know. It's so exciting.
Like, I'm just thinking about my own daughter. Yeah. Like, just thinking about, you know, she's just how she could move into work.
Yeah.
Like,
so I worked as a support worker for many years with somebody who had arthrogryposis, so painted with their mouth. So I was their hands and legs. So that would be classed under access to work if they went into the workplace as an enabler. So I use an enabler, and the times I use an enabler is to set my conference stuff up. So I find it very difficult to put the banners up and lay everything out on a conference table if I've got a stand, for example. So the enabler would move all of that stuff in for me, do all of that. They would go and get my lunch because I'm a celiac and a vegetarian. So that makes it quite tricky for me to be in the queue and make decisions. And then I'm dyspraxic. So trying to carry all of that in a crowded environment, I get all hot and sweaty and unnecessary. So they could do that. They can make sure that you're, you know, at such and such o'clock, please remind me to do this. I need a drink. So I've got somebody who's got who's in a wheelchair who uses an enabler to go and help them find an open toilet, for example. So rather than them go all the way to see if the accessible toilet's free, they get their enabler to do it. Their enabler then goes, I've begged it for you. Bagged it for you, and then come up. So otherwise they're not going up and down and up and down waiting to see if the room's free. I've got an enabler who's also my taxi driver. We've doubled them up. So they'll drop me off and set me up, go and do something for the rest of the day, and then come back at the end of the day, pack me down and put me back in the taxi, because that's the easiest way for me to walk rather than taking somebody with me.
So, you know, there's a reason why we have had 3 episodes with you, Kerry. And there's still more to come, but we do need to stop this podcast.
Yeah, we do. We do.
And sadly, we need to stop this podcast. Sadly, I want to hear more. And I think we'll get you on for another podcast to hear even more. I think any listener who's in the UK that has some sort of difficulty, dyslexia or whatever it is, that is impeding their full productivity at work, could they just pick up the phone tomorrow or right now and just
email me,
through that or whatever,
WhatsApp me, Twitter DM me, I'm on all the social media.
If they called you up, would you sort of hold their hand through this process?
Yeah, I do it for a lot of people. Absolutely.
And do they have to pay you to hold their hand through this process at the beginning? How does it work?
Well, that would be nice. That would be nice. I don't insist on payment, but what I do is I normally give people a 15-minute free consultation. And usually within that, we've either filled in the access to work form and they're fine, or we've had a discussion about how they might approach their employer, or we've just orientated them to the we'll put all the links in the in there anyway. So usually that's what I do. And the reason I do that is to protect myself, because otherwise, just like we've spoken for an hour and a half. That's exactly. So I do that to protect myself as well. So 15 minutes, free consultation or an email, quite happy to point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be very grateful if they want to choose us as their workplace assessor, then, you know, we'll be saying, right, okay, if that's what you want to do, no pressure from us, no influence from us, found us through an independent route, then we might be able to provide a little bit more help with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. And listeners, we'll put all that into the podcast description. So bottom line is, if you're interested in getting access to work, go call them up, whether you're self-employed, mm-hmm. whether you're employed in a small company, mm-hmm. a big company, whether you're just starting a job within 6 weeks, whether you've been after 6 weeks, whether you've just discovered you're dyslexic, whatever it is, call up that number that's down below. Mm-hmm. Have you got it there? No, never mind. Linked below. Call them up. Start the process going. And you can...
Directly go onto the website, the gov.uk website, and phone and fill in the form. And that will get you started even quicker.
Of course, you can see my bias, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Speak to someone. Yeah.
But I know, for example, my youngest hates the phone, would never go anywhere near the phone.
Yeah,
so other I just people want to provide an alternative.
Yeah, absolutely. For inclusivity, absolutely. Type it in or talk it in. It's all there. And if you want to include some assistance from Kerry, we'll put the link in there. Remind me of your company name again. I keep forgetting.
Diverse Learners. Kerry at diverse-learners.co.uk.
Okay.
Or admin will take you to Phoebe, admin@diverse-learners.co.uk.
Get in touch with them and ask for their help with that awareness raising, as well as the training for you personally. I think the whole awareness raising is an amazing gift to the whole company as well. That will meet a lot of their development plans and
this is exactly
goals
what I say
and
to
all
them.
Sorts of things. Also retention, you know, there's all
with
sorts
disability
of
confidence ticks, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And if they have another employer go through access to work, they would then get awareness training again, because it might be for a team or the whole organization. It's very flexible. This is my passion about getting the training. They can get free training.
Yes, that's fantastic. And Bullet Map Academy, you can also get some Bullet Map Academy training on how mind mapping can help you write stories and essays and doctor's reports, nurse reports, and those sorts of things as well. Our specialism
is separate to the workplace coping strategies. So you'll have Bullet Point Academy.
Yeah.
Plus the training that comes with Bullet Point Academy, and you could get workplace coping strategies training and the awareness training and the equipment and the software.
Absolutely. It's fantastic.
It's an amazing absolutely package. Fantastic.
It sounds a little bit too good to be true, but actually you can see the logic from a government's point of view. Because let's just look at the logic.
You know, you said we were finishing up, Darius.
I know, we should stop.
Otherwise, I would have said all of this. I'd have said, you know, if you think about it from a retention point of view. So the money that they might need to spend.
I'll tell you what, we're going to stop this episode and we're going to start the next episode talking about this.
If you're an employer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you very much, Kerry. You've been amazing. I'll see you in the next episode.
Yes, yeah, we might need a bit of a drink and a rest till then.
Fantastic.
Take care, everybody, and keep safe.
Yes. Well, that was a fantastic episode. I learned so much. I hope you learned so much, and you're probably still processing this and wondering, can access to work help me as an employee? Or you're maybe listening as an employer. I've got an episode for you where Kerry has talked about access to work from the employer's perspective, whether you're self-employed or you've got a small company of under 25 staff or a company of over 25 staff, or maybe you're part of a large organization, you're a manager or executive. This episode is for you. It's episode 101. We got Kerry together with some other employers and we recorded this on Zoom and made it very much focused on what it's like from a practical employer's perspective, how it can help with staff retention and staff productivity using the access to work for staff that will have might have dyslexic traits. Go to episode 101 to find out more about that. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll see you in the next episode. Thank you. Bye. This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.